Hey, Pop.
Hey, Lamont.
What are you doing over there?
I'm monkeying around here on the internet.
The internet?
Looking at eBay.
eBay?
Yep. You see all this stuff over here? My entire kingdom? I'm going to put it all on eBay and sell it all. I'm tired of messing with it.
You mean you're going to sell all this stuff on eBay? Did you tell them what you should start the bid at?
No.
Okay.
Well, the auction just finished, and let's see how many bids and how much I got. $5.
$5? You got ripped off.
Hey, Mr. Sanford.
Hey there, Julio.
Looks like we're going to be competitors.
What you talking about, you big dummy?
I just bought a whole bunch of chunk from some guy on eBay for $5.
Oh, Lord. Oh, it's a big one.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. 6 hydrocopic Margot veins. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated amulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fam. Milford trunnions. Ambifacient lunar wane shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplaneration. Retroencabulator.
Hey, welcome to Technorama. Technorama is the answer, and we're trying to figure out what the question is. This is show number 67 for December 19th, 2005. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is the wonderful Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm okay. Trying to get over the holiday runarounds.
Are you done Christmas shopping?
Well, of course not.
That's not the answer you're supposed to give.
Yeah. Yes, Chuck, I am.
I'm done.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.
By the way, tonight's show is not just 67, it's 43 in hex.
All right, we've been through all that. If you stick around long enough, you'll come back and we'll have some feedback about Craig's iPod problems that he was having. We've also got an interesting story from the one and only Charles Stell. We've got a final installment of our interview with T. Morris and a little homework assignment for y'all.
All right.
So stick around and... Yes.
You're speaking my language, Chuck. Y'all.
I've even heard rumors that we'll have some in-studio guests. So if you hang on, we'll be right back. On this day in tech history for December 19th, 2005... This is December 19th. It's the 353rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are just 12 days remaining in 2005. It was on this date in 1835 that the Toledo Blade newspaper begins publishing. And the first autogyro flight in the United States takes place on this date in 1928. And in 1972, the Apollo 17, the last manned lunar flight, returns to Earth. The first personal computer, the Altair 8800, goes on sale on this date in 1974. And in 1988, lawn darts are banned from sale in the United States. In 1997, Titanic, the highest grossing movie ever as of 2005, opens in U.S. theaters. And in 2001, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, opens in U.S. theaters. And also on this date in 2001, a new world record high barometric pressure of 1,085.6 HPA which is 32.06 inches in mercury, is set in a place I can't pronounce in Mongolia. Happy birthday on this date in 1714 to John Winthrop, the American astronomer. In 1813, Thomas Andrews, the Irish chemist, is born. 1852 was the birthday of Albert Abraham Michelson, the German-born physicist. 1903, George Davis Snell, the American geneticist, is born. And Richard Leakey turns 61 today. He's the British anthropologist, son of Lewis and Mary Leakey. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for December 19th, 2005.
Already in the microprocessor.
Faster than fiber chat.
You're listening to Chuck Tomasi on ChuckChat.com.
I saw Richard Leakey once.
No.
Get your mind out of the men's room for crying out loud. That's not what... Oh, I shouldn't even have said that to you.
Really, Chuck?
I met...
Just move on to the list.
I met the famous British anthropologist once upon a time.
Did you really?
Yeah,
did you really?
He came as he was a speaker at our university when I was in college.
Richard Leakey, I presume.
Yeah, but can you wait till we wash our hands? I get that all out right. of our... That was kind of ripped off from our interview with Patrick Norton, which will start airing on Wednesday, by the way.
Yep. Got a little Christmas present for you.
We've got some follow-up to your problems with your iPod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you speak your problems, the listeners will come through. This one is from Matt. He left this on our Skype answering machine. If you just enter Chuck Chat into Skype, you can call anytime and leave a message. And I check the number of messages when I go down and change the laundry, which is about twice a week. Normally my wife does the laundry. I've got backup tapes to change down there too. So if it weren't for laundry, I'd forget to rotate my tapes. But let's
see. So you got tapes and your voicemail down there at the laundry.
Brag about your iPod problem. The emissions on your song are not right, so you have to go and you have to update type in your password. You have to go into iTunes, try to play the song, and ask for your username and password for your iTunes account that bought the songs. Tape that in, and you can play it. And re-sync your iPod. Should work just fine. Bye.
Did you purchase any songs off of iTunes? Was that the issue?
Yes and no. Let's go ahead and read this other listener feedback, and I'll explain. I found out what my problem was.
It's from our good buddy Marv.
Mm-hmm.
You take it, since it was sent to you.
Yeah. Greg, I just paused the latest Chuck Chat to send you an email. The problem sounds like you transferred iTunes DRM track to your computer onto your iPod. It's happened to me with the Lascivious Biddies album I purchased on iTunes. The iPod just flips through each track in the playlist until it gets past all the M4P files. To fix this, I just burned the CD and re-ripped the tracks. Don't bother to figure out how to authorize it on the iPod. I just happened, it only happened again with some other device in the future. Well, I appreciate the listener feedback, but I did find out what my problem was.
What was your problem with the iPod?
It was actually a little bit of goof on my part, but it's also a little problem on iTunes. I was at work. I had my iPod. It is authorized actually to sync only podcasts from my Mac at home. I don't really sync the music database. However, I was at work and with the Geek Christmas Carol that we put together, I was wanting to take it and listen to it in the car. So I slapped up the iPod onto my Windows box. iTunes came up, and since it doesn't give you any options for the iPod until it's hooked up, it started syncing my music.
Oh.
So, which there wasn't anything on there. So basically, but when I told it to stop, it actually was deleting the files, but it hadn't refreshed the database.
Mm-hmm.
So it thinks the files are there, and of course it didn't play them, and it didn't see them, and that's why it skips through.
Okay.
So I basically wiped out my...
Just to wipe out, refresh, and everything was cool.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to do I haven't done it yet, but I'll have to do a restore and resync my MP3. So that's exactly what happened was iTunes, it doesn't give you any options on would you like me to sync as soon as you hook something up? It just kind of does it. Mm. So that's my problem.
Okay. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not the train coming right at you.
Yeah. Well, good thing I did have my library somewhere else.
We've got an audio follow-up from Daryl Shandro. He's one of our visually impaired listeners, and we were talking about Ajax and how it's broken and sucks and the accessibility stuff, so he had some retort on some of that, and this is exactly what I was looking for, was something from our sight-challenged or blind audience to give feedback on.
Hello there, and happy holidays to you, Chuck and Craig. This is Daryl Shandro with the Blind Access Journal blog and podcast, found at blindaccessjournal.com. Listen to your most recent show, Chuck Chat, where you asked about Ajax programming and its accessibility or lack thereof. Unfortunately, there are currently some serious accessibility problems with a lot of Ajax sites, some more than others. Dig.com does not seem to be too terrible. Seems to work pretty well if you can get past the visual verification required for sign up, and unfortunately the visual verification required to submit a story. I'd say that by and large with Dig.com we're being locked out by visual verification more than by Ajax programming. But an example of Ajax programming that is severely hampering us would be Gmail. Gmail does offer a basic interface, a basic HTML interface. That works quite well. But the standard mode interface does not really work so well with screen readers. And as with just about every accessibility issue, I put the responsibility on both parties, right? On both the mainstream, the developer of the Ajax application, as well as the developers of screen reading technology, of assistive technology on which we rely. I think it's really, really important for those industries to meet each other halfway. So if Ajax programmers can do something reasonable that makes the results of their efforts accessible, yes, by goodness, they ought to be doing it, and we ought to insist on doing it. At the same time, however, screen readers need to step up to the plate and support more of these different types of technologies, okay? It needs to be a very cooperative effort. This issue with the back button and these other problems, I'm not concerned about. As long as the user interface makes sense and I can get where I need to go. It's kind of frustrating when you think the back button would be the best way to go and you press it on your browser and things are messed up because you're in some kind of an application that doesn't support it. It's kind of frustrating, but oh well. All I really care about in the end is that it's reasonably accessible, okay? If the back button doesn't work or some feature doesn't work, so be it. That's my take on it, everyone. I wish you, Chuck and Craig, your families, and all of the Chuck Chat Technorama listeners a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is Daryl Shandro with the Blind Access Journal, found at www.blindaccessjournal.com. Signing off. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Daryl. Craig, did you have anything to add to that?
I do. Well, one, I want to say Merry Christmas to you as well, Daryl. Being a web developer, I've been thinking about what made me think about accessibility things was I remember, Chuck, you were up there talking with Daryl for a good bit mm-hmm. before he got on Twitch. Mm-hmm. And now I didn't really get to talk to him, but y'all had mentioned he had an accessibility type podcast. I can't remember the name of this podcast now. But anyway, it made me think how, when I develop stuff, trying to keep that in my mind, that somebody that may have problems, you know, taking my site in as input to be able to process it. But so I wanted to say that, you know, I guess indirectly, his podcast has made me think about that, which is a good thing. But I do want to say something about Gmail. I don't know if this will help out, but just throwing this out there for Gmail. Mm-hmm. You know, they just released a newer version of Gmail for mobile devices. It's the HTML. It's the like an HTML page, but it's very stripped down, and it's very quick on my little browser, but it looks very plain. So I thought maybe screen readers might be work with that a little better.
That might work.
Yeah, I don't know if that'll help out or not. But
have to check that out. There you go, Daryl. You get another one. You get to follow up on that one.
Yeah, and then get back to us.
And speaking of follow-ups, one last one from Charles Stell down in the sticks. We were talking about how cold it was and about snowblowers and frozen water and whatnot. He sent us this really interesting story. I found this fascinating.
Hi, guys. Greetings from the sticks. It's Charles Stell. Well, the MP3 tag on your last podcast said you were freezing your bearings off, so I felt obligated to impart this little bit of sea lore to you. When the British Navy was running square riggers all over the world, and they made it out to the Pacific and all those nice tropical islands, the sailors, for some reason, decided to start calling the iron trays that were bolted to the decks and held cannonballs monkeys. I suppose because they thought that the cannonballs stacked on the trays looked like stacked coconuts, and since the monkeys carried the coconuts around and held them, that the trays became known as monkeys. Well, you know, management, the Admiralty couldn't have these nasty old cast iron trays on their flagship, so they had theirs made out of brass. This is all well and good, except for the poor guy who had to polish it, of course, until you get to the poles where it's very cold. Then the brass trays contract much faster than the iron cannonballs. Since the depressions in the trays were shallow and the cannonballs were all touching each other, when it got cold enough, the trays would contract enough that one of the balls would be forced out of its little depression and take off across the deck. Naturally, if there was a large stack of them, the rest of them took off too. And so it, in fact, really can get cold enough to freeze the balls off of a brass monkey.
Bye. Do you buy it?
I guess so. That's pretty good.
I like that one. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
I think maybe we need to send that one to Mythbusters.
You know what? I think Charles should start a podcast if he doesn't already have one, called From the Sticks.
From the Sticks.
Yep.
I'd listen to it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I like the way he started off. Is Charles Still from the Sticks? And I was like, you know, that should be a podcast.
We got to interview
him. Stories like that all day long. I'd listen to it.
We've got to interview him. I want to follow up. This show is brought to you exclusively with sponsorship from listeners like you. And we want to give a great big thank you to Joni from New Hampshire for her generous contributions this past week. She donated to the tip jar, which keeps us going for bandwidth for a good couple of months. And I think she's going to get our Uber Geek status of the month for December.
Joni.
So thank you very much. And remember, this is the season of giving. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Scrooge was not the man he used to be. He was as cold as the dead of winter.
Starting tonight at the stroke of midnight, you will be visited.
I'm Mark, the ghost of Tech Christmas Past.
We're the ghosts of Tech Christmas Present.
Ghost, Tech Christmas Future, blah, blah, blah.
A Geek Christmas Carol, presented by Friends in Tech, friendsintech.com.
You're not going to believe this, but Lenny Ann Jenkins just walked in.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, hold on. Door open. Lenny, why don't you step a little closer to the mic? Okay, first I wanted to tell you all that it was really cool doing that thing with the friends in tech, and it came out really good. Lenny, what was your favorite part? Oh, I think I had the hardest part doing that thing where I had to end my podcast. It was really sad because Tim couldn't get his surgery unless I, and Mr. Scrooge had just fired me.
It brought a tear to my eye, Lenny.
Well, thanks, Craig. Did you notice I ended my podcast with a 101?
Oh, yeah, of course. What else would you end it with?
You guys are my hero. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Lenny. Jenkins, you got anything to say?
Yeah, hold on. Get stand up to the microphone. What?
You didn't really say too much in the podcast.
Nope.
This is going to be a tough interview, Craig. Help me out.
So what was your motivation for being the ghost of the future?
The bottle.
The bottle. All right. Well,
thanks for stopping by there, guys.
No, yeah, you guys did a great job. Thanks a lot.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
101.
Thanks, man. 101 to you too.
Thanks, Lenny. Thanks, Jenkins. Oh, till next time.
I thought you told your wife not to open the door for him.
They just showed up. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with those. Oh, hey, wait a minute. We do have one last voicemail.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. I forgot I put this one in there. It's in the lineup.
Hey, man.
Hey.
Just some quick feedback. I love the intro. I had a grasshopper bit. That was great. That's all. Talk to you later. See ya.
He liked the grasshopper.
Yeah, I did too.
Imagine what he's going to say about Sanford and Son.
You big dummy.
Show just keeps getting crazier and crazier. Yeah. All right, top 10 list. Get the rim shot. You're in charge of the rim shot. Top 10 ways to tell you are a geek.
Wait a minute.
That was not the rim shot.
I don't have the rim shot.
No. Sounds like you're digging through a hope chest and you're pulling out strange things there, Craig.
Man.
What's in Craig's sound effects? All right, top 10 ways to tell you're a geek. This is taken from December.com. You know you're a geek when you have recurring dreams involving... When you have recurring dreams involving recursive functions. You want to know what? I actually have had, not recurring dreams, but I have had dreams about recursive functions.
I had IP numbers swimming in my head when I lay down and close my eyes at night.
You know you're a geek when you have wondered about internet access in the afterlife. When your last romantic encounter involved the Heine-Borel theorem.
Go look it up.
When your digital watch is bigger than your cell phone. Am
that
I going to have to
case
do...
now.
Yeah, it could be. Am I going to have to do the rim shot?
Yes, because I don't have it.
All right.
There we go.
When your child at birth knows VI commands. When you evaluate any romantic partner in terms of his or her Google page rank. When you refer to Chicago's Magnificent Mile as the Magnificent 1.6 kilometers. You know you're a geek if a restaurant employee tells you, "Hello, I'll be your server." And you respond, "I'll be your client." That was too easy because they wouldn't get it. They wouldn't get it. I've been trying to retwist that. You know you're a geek when you refer to your wedding as my big fat geek wedding. And finally, you know you're a geek when you have a strong preference for either an infinite amount of finite state machines or a finite amount of infinite state machines. Yeah, the geeks laughed.
I'll be your enemy, man.
I want to give a shout out to the people in the chat room, Mad Marv. Who else is in there?
Marv.
Mark Shepard.
Shepard.
And T Elliott, which is not the Tim Elliott from Minnesota who does Winecast, I found out.
Elliott!
This is a different Tim Elliott. We have two Idiot. Tim Elliotts who listen to this. All right, knock it off. All right, this is the fourth and final installment of our interview with T. Morris. And coming up on the next show, we will begin our three-part interview with Patrick Norton, whom
Elliot.
Has a really interesting ending. We'll just leave it at that.
Phone home.
All right, we'll be back in a few minutes.
As a matter of fact, next week I'm going to be teaching, as far as we know, it's the first course of its kind, at least on the East Coast, if not in the country. But where I work at EEI Communications here in Alexandria, Virginia, and Silver Spring, Maryland, we're offering a course in podcasting for corporate business and government.
Oh, neat.
And the textbook is, shocker this, Podcasting for Dummies. And but really the thing that, and this was where I really felt like I knew that we had tapped onto something. We offered this up as a seminar, a free seminar. I was supposed to give a 3-hour free seminar about what exactly podcasting is. I was like, okay. And they told me, expect maybe 10 to 15 people to show up at a seminar like this. We usually get a full house of 30 people if it's something like Photoshop or InDesign or Illustrator, and we're giving free lessons on that. I said, okay, no problem. Well, they had 60 people call in saying they were interested in the seminar. Hmm. 60. And they said, well, yeah, that's usually how it goes. You'll probably get, 20 people. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, no problem, 20 people. Still, that's not bad. We had a count of 36 people show up for this podcasting seminar. Some of them were already podcasting. But to give you an idea of the interest in podcasting, I had people from the German embassy there, from from NOAA, the National Observatory for Weather. Mm-hmm. They were there. I had people from the Kennedy Center there, from NASA there, and cool. they all wanted to know about podcasting. Well, the guy who's in charge of EEI's class schedules, he was so taken by the turnout. He said, we're supposed to be teaching this course in February. Then he looked at me for 1 second, he turned back around, he goes, but we decided we're going to teach it in December. And ooh. I said, we are? And yeah, so next week I'm going to be teaching this course in podcasting for government and corporate business.
Hey, that's cool.
I'm really excited about it. I mean, it's going to probably be, it's going to probably be 70-80% talking about podcasting and 20% of, okay, now here's how we make it work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very excited about that. And there have been a lot of people talking about coming out to the Apple Store at Tyson's Corner, which is happening this Saturday. December 10th, I'm going to be there, and they want me to do a 1-hour seminar on podcasting. So again, it really is amazing how quickly everything's been taken off.
Mm-hmm.
with podcasting, and I just sincerely hope that in the second printing, and God willing, the third printing, we can just keep it going, because the more books sell, the happier I am, and the happier Evo is too.
Oh, sure. And you want to keep Evo happy.
Yeah, when you keep Evo happy, the world rests easier.
That's right.
You don't want to make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Oh, God, what an awful movie. I kept sitting there thinking, the guy who directed Crouching Tiger directed this? Oh, man. Just a train wreck.
What else is in the works for T. Morris coming up in the future?
Well,
can you check his schedule for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm going to take a very well-deserved nap. That's one thing I think I should do. But actually, I started up a brand new podcast in October, and it's been getting some really positive feedback. It's called The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. But actually, I'm finding out that a lot of the people that are listening aren't writers of fantasy. Some of these people are just writers of romance, of chick lit, of all kinds of different genres, and they're getting something out of it. And then there are just fans, just people that are that have no desire to go into writing. They're just people who just enjoy writing, you know, podcasts about writing. And what I do, which is different from what Merle Lafferty does and what Mike Stackpole does, is that I go into the marketing aspect of books. I go into stuff that authors are not given any kind of arsenal whatsoever. Basically, when you write your first book, it lands on your doorstep, and they basically say, okay, there it is, and that's it. And a majority of authors are left to fend for themselves. They're not given any kind of tips on how to market their books and how to market themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of put it in perspective, last year, in 2004, 170,000 books were published in 1 year.
Wow.
It's 170,000 books. Now, out of those 170,000 books, I had two that were published. And I want you, out of all those books, to buy only two books, my books. And that's what the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy is all about. It's a podcast about marketing your books and marketing yourself. And I mean, don't get me wrong, Wiley Press has done more for Podcasts for Dummies than any other publisher. I mean, I got a shirt. I got free the handouts that you see, the little booklets.
Yep, yep.
Now, if I wanted to do that with my fiction, I'd have to do that. Wiley covered the cost on that.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was really, really nice. Whereas if it were... and they also did, you know, promotional postcards, all that kind of stuff. Now, my fiction publisher, Dragonland Press, when she has it in her budget, she makes me bookmarks, and she makes me postcards, and that's great too. But there's only so much a publisher can do. And what you need to do as a new author is get out there and put in the face time. And a lot of new authors don't want to do that. But unfortunately, that is the way the business works now. Without face time, people aren't really going to buy your books. And then you've got, let's see, what have I got in the works for 2006? Well, right now I'm working with Evo and another guy named Chris Miller. We're doing patiobooks.com. And that's been a huge success. We've got over 11 novels currently being podcast, 11 titles being podcast right now, and we have over 40 in production.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're doing this
40? Wait a minute, you said 40?
40.
40.
40.
Wow.
And now to get from production to actual on the feed, we kind of give you the litmus test where you have to first meet our specs, and then once you meet our audio specs, then you give us 5 chapters up front. Once you give us the 5 chapters up front, then boom, you're off. You're hitting the ground and running. And you'd be surprised how many authors out there are still trying to get a hang of the specs. The authors who get the hang of the specs and, you know, meet all our requirements and do everything that we ask you to do, they get turned live. But the fact that we've only been online for a few months and we already have 40 people that are they're working on getting the patio book up to speed and up to snuff and recording, that's great. I mean, we couldn't be happier. And this all started when I, you know, first came on the scene with Moravi, and then Mark Jeffrey came on with Pocket Independent, and then Scott Sigler came on with Earthcore. We were the three musketeers of patio books. And so I'll be working with patiobooks.com all the way through 2006. I'm currently working on the next Billabob Battings mystery, which is called, it's right now the working title is called Billabob Battings and the Case of the Pitcher's Pendant. And from there we'll see if it works out. When is it going to be out in 2006? I don't know. I'm not going to make that kind of commitment. I have a 17-month-old daughter. I take everything one step at a time.
Oh yes.
Keep the priorities.
Yes, yes.
Thanks again for joining us, and good luck with the book sales, T.
Thank you very much. I hope to hear from some of your listeners in the future.
So, you've made your decision.
you're going to go through with it. It's time to let them know you care. How much should you spend? For a lifelong commitment to someone who keeps giving back to you, 2 months' salary is the standard. It may seem like a lot, but consider what you'll be getting in return. That's why we make it easy with the tip jar icon on the Technorama page at www.chuckchat.com.
You're listening to Technorama.
Well, it weren't no cigar cast, but...
Hey, I like the cigar talk, man. It's a nice little departure.
Departure it was. We've got some geek thoughts, and then we'll be back to wrap up the show. Sound good to you?
Bring them. Let's do it.
Geek Thoughts. I would love to change the world, but they never gave me the source code.
Hi, this is Tim from the Winecast Podcast, and you're listening to Chuck Tomasi on ChuckChat.com.
That's the other Tim Elliott, not the one that's in the chat room tonight. I was fooled.
You were duped.
Hey, I'm wiped.
Why don't you take a nap?
I hope everybody has a great time, a great Christmas, and you have a homework, your assignment, Mr. Phelps, should you choose to accept. We would like you, the whole wiki screen capture thing. Oh, by the way, did you see my second laptop, the one that I do these gizmo calls and things on?
You know what? I have not checked it in the last couple of days because I've been like...
You should.
I've been like extremely busy.
It's been pretty well... I put up the machine that I do our Skype and gizmo calls on. I've put one of my dolphin pictures on there when I went swimming with the dolphins back in summer of 2004. It was fun. So you have to check that out. Anyway, the listener assignment,
your homework for last week,
is to send us an audio clip.
Yes, Mr. Tomasi.
Your assignment is to send us an audio clip with your holiday wishes to us or to other Technorama listeners.
Here
we go. Yes, ma'am. I'll send that in MP3 to chuck.tomasi@gmail.com.
Hey, that's pretty cool. You got close to that dolphin.
Yeah, I was swimming with it. It pulled me along. It was a great time.
Well, it's expensive to do that too, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was kind of included in the package at Discovery Cove.
Was it worth it?
Yep. So send us a message.
We can talk about that later.
Holiday wishes to us, other Technorama listeners, to your mom, whatever. Be original or not. We want to hear from you. Here's how to reach us. That's your cue.
Oh, yes. You can reach us at the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com or send audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. You can email me, Craig, at chuckchat.com. That's K-R-E-G. And visit the website for links to our forums, our swag, our webcam, our wiki notes, and a whole lot more. We're going to be making a couple of changes to chuckchat.com, so be sure to keep an eye out for that.
Big changes coming soon. I know I've hinted at them a lot lately, but...
the whole site is going to be pink.
Well, that would be hideous. only if my kids got a hold of it.
And Hello Kitty will be dancing across the screen as you're trying to view the show notes.
Trademark issues. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, and as always, a binary high five.
101!
I don't understand what's going on here.
Just use your imagination.
Yes, that's right.